If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Thanks for joining me today, Tuesday, squarely in the middle of fall. And it's Miami week. Game's here, too, 3:30 Saturday. So we'll regroup for that. Hopefully, we'll get some players back on FSU's side of the ball. Lots to talk about today. A couple of pretty significant events. I know we've sort of gotten a little bit maybe complacent with the change of seasons. We've had Halloween. We're getting into that time of the year, Thanksgiving around the corner, and everybody sort of just takes a couple of deep breaths. But some things going on. JT Burdett will be sentenced today, and there's word out he has hired a powerful lawyer from Washington, D.C., and that's what people do that have a lot of money. And this is the argument you hear about the justice system. You can, you know, when you've got the money that some of these people have, you can just continue to hire lawyers. I said liars. Some people might, hire lawyers until you find somebody that's got some connections with the process. This, the lawyer that JT has hired, JT Burnett, that is hired for his sentencing hearing is today, and I don't know the time. I've not seen anything come across social media. Amy Mason Sharia, who was a appellate litigator and clerked for the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Couple things here. First of all, evidently she will be in the courtroom during the sentencing. But this is the article by Jeff Berlew makes it pretty clear that there's going to be an appeal of this decision. So again, you got money, you got lawyers. There are always ways to appeal, and I'm not sure what would happen in terms of the sentencing going to jail while it is being appealed. Also today, on the same day, is when the other two people that have pled guilty in this federal corruption probe will be going to detention centers across, I think it's across the state, Scott Maddox and Paige Carter Smith. So, interesting, noteworthy day on that issue. Next segment, we will talk about some breaking news and how it relates to the Leon, and it relates to the Leon County School Board. As you may be aware, there's a division of administrative hearing judge ruled against these group of school boards that decided to pool their resources and sue the Department of Health in regards to the mask mandate. The hearing officer made a decision, and then most of the school boards, there's about six or seven, decided to appeal. One did not. Leon County did go ahead and decide to appeal. And remember, this is costing us money. But there's some debate about the process that Superintendent Hannah used, and not all school board members were on board with this to move forward. So we'll talk about, the ruling by the DOA judge, which I think is one of the more clear rulings in the sense of why he made that decision. And I think it is consistent with one of the decisions made over in Alachua County. And so we'll talk about that in the next segment. Leon County Commission meets today. We'll run through some of the issues covered there. Not of a lot of excitement things, although some big money issues. I would say in two issues north of $10 million being spent. So we'll let you know what that covers. Also, the city commission meeting, the city commission will be meeting on Wednesday. Again, we'll highlight a couple of issues there. One of those has to do with the sewer system here in, the city of Tallahassee. There's been a lot of debate, and Tallahassee Reports has done, I think, one or two stories on this about the transparency related to spills, when you have sewage spills. There was just recently a 400,000-gallon raw sewage spill in Tallahassee. And so there is an item on the city commission meeting that we'll dig into a little bit that addresses some of the transparency issues, because you know, obviously, this is a one of the major, I guess it's one of the major responsibilities of local government. If you look at law enforcement, it's, you know, the movement of wastewater and sewer is a big issue. And there are a lot of arguments that our system has been aging and not being replaced in a timely fashion. I mean, you know, it's interesting. These sewer systems go back hundreds of years. You know, it's basically clay pipe in some instances. And so, but anyway, we'll talk about one of those issues. Another thing is I wanted to talk about some of the developments and how big some of these new developments going around town. And I bet you'll be surprised. There's one up north. There's one in the Wilani Plantation area. And there's one that we don't hear a lot about. And we're going to write about it this week. But it is on the city agenda. And it is it's down on the south side. And it's about an 800-acre planned unit development there between Blairstone and Orange Avenue and Tram Road. And this is property that's been owned for a long time by a family, and they've just sat on it. And now if you look in that area where the VA hospital is coming west from Southwood, Tallahassee Classical is there. And then if you go on down Orange Avenue, or I guess it's Paul Russell Road, you got Rickards High School's right there. So between Rickards High School and Southwood is where this land is. And so, you know, I think the timing of this, given the housing market, the price of single-family homes, and also the demand. Obviously, the prices are high because there's high demand. You start to see these developments, and so we'll run through those in the last segment. And then also want to touch on a couple of state issues. Governor DeSantis has formally now filed for re-election in 2022. A lot of things going on there. I mean, you know, the National Democratic Governors Association has, you know, sort of leaked. It's been leaked that they're not really interested in really giving much money down here in Florida because of the way the trends that have taken place with regards to who might win in 2022. You've got Charlie Crist, you know, who is running for governor. You've got Ms. Taddeo. You got Ms. Freed. So there are three people there. And then you got Roger Stone saying that he will run if DeSantis doesn't say he won't run for president after he gets elected governor. So that's we'll touch on some of those issues. Also, University of Florida is in the news with this whole issue revolving around these experts. I think they took three different positions within, I guess, about 2 days. And people are beginning to wonder if the people that are running the football team are running this operation also. So anyway, we'll get you caught up to date on that. And also, you know, there's an issue that is a couple of issues, very politicized issues. One in Jacksonville where they're one of the illegal immigrants, it appears, that was transported from the border to Jacksonville, has been arrested for murder. And now, obviously, that has become a flashpoint for the policy there. DeSantis has brought it up in very, you know, I would say, passionate terms, which then on the other side of that is views is very political. So we'll dig into that a little bit. And then also, Ben Shapiro is coming to town. His radio show is carried here on 93.3, but somewhat of a negative article in the Tallahassee Democrat, which is not to be unexpected, but we'll go over that anyway and get you up to date with that. So stay tuned. Lots to talk about. I appreciate you joining us. And we'll be back right after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Hey, that's a relevant song today, I think, for a number of people. Above the Fold is sponsored in part by the Medicare Help Desk. The Medicare Help Desk offers free consultations to help you navigate through the complicated processes and numerous types of plans available to you. There's no charge for their service whatsoever. Open enrollment is going on now through December 7th, so now is the time you can make changes to your Medicare Advantage or Part D prescription drug plans to take effect the beginning of next year. There are so many options to consider, so having someone who knows the details and can point you in the right direction is essential. The Medicare Help Desk represents all major insurance companies and makes the process simple and easy. So give them a call today at 850-632-0033. 850-632-0033. Or you can check them out at MedicareHelpDesk.com. All right, well, we've got breaking news. We were going to talk about this during this segment, so this is appropriate. Leon County Schools has just released a tweet that says, Leon County Schools is withdrawing from the appeal process of the DOA ruling in regards to the State Department of Health emergency ruling. I will read their statement. Quote, while we continue to believe in our rights to make decisions that are overwhelmingly supported by our community, we no longer believe it's prudent for us to pursue a short-term legal remedy to determine where the line is drawn between state rights and the rights of our local school system, said Superintendent Reichiana. We will continue to look for other avenues to advocate for home rule and local control in the future. So this is interesting because, you know, this morning I got a call from Alvis Striplin, who was upset that these group of school boards that it initiated this lawsuit against DOH, and the administrative judge, Brian Newman, ruled against their action. And so then they immediately, the group, minus Orange County, which is Orlando, decided to appeal. Well, it looks like Superintendent Hannah made that decision without consulting the board, the board of school board members. Alvis Striplin thought that that was... not the correct process. She wanted to be able to register that she's looking. Her voice was she's tired of the legal maneuvering and the wasting of money in this process. And so I guess that Superintendent Hannah assumed that since they had voted to go forward with the original hearing that they would support an appeal. She obviously don't know if anybody else might have called him and voiced concerns behind the scenes. But evidently it had some impact because they were scheduled to go ahead and be part of the appeal. Now, you know, for those that don't know, and I'm, you know, the ruling by Newman, Judge Newman, basically stated, and I think his words are important here because, like I said in the opening, this is consistent with a finding in Alachua County with regards to the vaccine mandates. And what you start to get to when you get into these judicial proceedings is the actual political posturing and the making this about emotion gets put aside a little bit, and judges start asking specific questions, and they want specific answers. And unlike politics, where somebody can just make a statement and then walk away from the mic, in a courtroom you have to answer the judge. And so if you remember in Alachua County, it was like, well, wait a minute. You're saying that you're gonna mandate that these people have to get an experimental vaccine. What steps did you take before you got to that remedy? Was there not something else you could have done? And all of a sudden everybody just sort of shut down. So they put in the injunction, and then the city of Gainesville said, all right, we're not gonna do this anymore. You don't have to have a mandate. This is the same. So this is the lawsuit that's going on with Leon County. Now, if you pivot to the Leon County School Board, who got into this group of school boards and challenged the DOH decision that said, look, you can't force kids to wear masks. So Newman, the judge, Judge Brian Newman, wrote that school boards, quote, failed to prove that the emergency rule opt-out provisions facilitate the spread of COVID-19 in schools. Just from an engineer. In other words, they didn't prove that, look, if kids don't wear masks, COVID-19 is going to go crazy in schools. They didn't prove that because their argument was you got to wear masks because of the spread of COVID. He said, quote, on the contrary, the evidence admitted in this case established that the emergency rule opt-out provisions strike the right balance by ensuring that the protocols that govern the control of COVID in schools go no further than what was required to keep children safe and in school. So again, it is refreshing to hear judges talk about facts instead of this political back and forth about, you know, between the governor and elected officials in the school districts. Now, these school boards that included Leon until 30 minutes ago was Miami-Dade, Leon, Duval, Broward, and Alachua counties. They took the appeal to the 4th District Court of Appeal in West Palm Beach after an administrative law judge upheld the rule. So it says the boards filed the motion Monday asking the appeals court to put the case on the fast track. Well, so that was yesterday. So Superintendent Hanna put his own decision-making on the fast track today and decided, look, you know, we don't want any more part of this. I think that, you know, he was going to have to bring this. Obviously, there was school board members that were not happy that this decision was made without their input. The next meeting is next Tuesday. And so I think he's just decided that, you know, we're gonna pull out of this and be done with it. And you know, and I read you his statement. So it will be interesting to see the fallout from this at the meeting next Tuesday and see if there's any comments on this. You know, unfortunately, the school board members have become very reluctant to speak about anything or go on the record about some of these issues. You know, we've had a tough time getting comments from school board members on some of the gender issues going on in the middle schools that we have covered recently. And we've talked about this in terms of the federal lawsuit that was filed related to the Deer Lake Middle School situation and the gender transition plan that was implemented or at least put in place without the consent or even knowledge of the parents. This lawsuit, you know, hasn't even warranted any comment from school board officials. I will tell you, the Superintendent Hanna has been very accessible in his comment on this. We wrote a couple stories about this. WCTV did follow. Now, I did a little bit of a snarky opinion piece this weekend about the failure of the Tallahassee Democrat to cover this issue. And, you know, it's one of these things. You've got, you know, the title of my opinion piece with Tallahassee Democrat ignores federal lawsuit related to gender policy, but covers Superman's bisexual son. And so, you know, the title there says it all. Am I arguing that you don't cover Superman's bisexual son? Look, if that's what gets the clicks for the Tallahassee Democrat, then you know, that's fine. But that doesn't mean you don't have to cover a 63-page federal lawsuit that's handed to you on a silver platter to address, you know, an issue that is not only of local and state significance, but is national significance in regards to parental rights on these issues. Not a word. And you know, this, as I say in the opinion piece, it's you know, you can say, well, you know, why are you concerned about what the Tallahassee Democrat is covering? Well, look, they're quote the paper of record, and I understand that their influence is waning, but they have a full-time K-12 education reporter. They cover the education meetings, and it would be helpful if they covered this story, because then it would put more pressure on elected officials to respond. I mean, look, we're submitting questions to elected officials and we'll report on that. But, you know, coverage requires an acknowledgement that what is happening is newsworthy, right? So right now, the Tallahassee Democrat is telling their viewers or their readers that this issue is not newsworthy. And that's just not the case. It also requires, when you do the coverage, it requires difficult questions for elected leaders. And that's the other thing. It's about, you know, it's about transparency and holding people accountable. Without this acknowledgement and this coverage by the media outlets, there's a tacit endorsement and no accountability. And so hopefully they'll get there. But on this issue in regards to your middle school children, the Tallahassee Democrat has made the decision to remain silent. All right, when we get back, we'll go over what's going on in the Leon County and the city commissions. Stay tuned.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Tuesday. Getting the week going. The JT Burnett hearing starts at 1 o'clock. So evidently they have started to arriving at the federal courthouse in downtown Tallahassee. So we won't have any update for you before we leave the air, but we'll obviously follow this and get information to you. All right, Leon County Commission meeting today. Just a couple of things that I wanted to touch on, just to let you know this, what's going on there. There's a program called PACE, Property Assessed Clean Energy Program. And this is something that it's a financing tool for energy conservation, energy efficiency programs. And the Leon County, I remember dealing with this back in 2017, Leon County partnered with Renovate America. Now, it's a federal program which teams up with providers to provide loans to people that decide to finance energy efficiency improvements to their home, solar energy improvements, things of that nature. However, the program that the private sector program that they partnered with, Renovate America, had some financial issues, filed for bankruptcy, and to continue to offer this program, they have to take a vote today to go ahead and join the Florida PACE funding agency. And the resolution will continue the residential part of the PACE program. Now, you might ask, are people using this program? Since 2017, it says more than 148 residential property owners have used this financial tool to make energy efficiency upgrades to their homes. Again, as I said, it was was administered through Renovate America. That will no longer, hasn't been the case for over a year. So to continue the residential part of this program, they've got to join this agency. And so currently there are roughly 23 other Florida counties that are members of the Florida PACE funding agency. So anyway, we'll see what happens with that. A couple of big ticket items that I wanted to cover. One is the Motorola radio system that's used by first responders. That's something that, you know, doesn't get a lot of coverage. It's, you know, there's been, I think Motorola has been providing the service for a long time. Obviously, there's always upgrades to the system because of technology. We've had a history. There was a little bit of a history of communication problems back in the day with the system that they have in place. Let me see if I can find the real quick. Let's see here. Yeah, in July of 1999, the city and county sheriff entered into an interlocal agreement to join the system. This is the radio system. In 2009, after an investment of almost $20 million and the implementation of significant upgrades to the system, the sheriff and the county became 50% owners of the system. The current annual operating cost to support the 800 megahertz system is $3.2 million, with the county paying $1.6 million. So, So they're going to do the upgrade a year early, and the cost is going to be about $5.3 million. Part of that will be financed through the low bidder, which was Capital City Bank. And so they'll vote on that. It's obviously is a very detailed proposal. But again, one that is, significant amount of money. Now, the other thing I wanted to address is there's an item in general business category titled Addressing Poverty and Inequities in 32304 zip code. As you know, that is 32304 has been popularized because of the level of poverty that has been measured there through different census programs. And so that has become sort of the cause of the community is to address the issues there. Now, this item provides a comprehensive report on program services, initiatives and events adopted and implemented by the county and other community partners to address poverty and inequities in communities and neighborhoods within the 32304 zip code. Additionally, as requested by the board at their annual retreat, the audit presents plans that have been developed by residents of the neighborhoods in 32304 and provides the recommendations to better coordinate, align, and enhance existing programs and services with these plans to continue to improve the neighborhoods. Now, what you don't get to in that first paragraph is what we'll get to now, the fiscal impact. I was blown away by these numbers just a little bit. And, you know, from a national perspective, we're dealing with the Build Back Better plan and the massive infusion of cash or money to address a lot of the same terms we're seeing in this item, you know, poverty, inequities, the climate change, things of that nature. But listen to the amount of money that we have committed and are committing to this endeavor. As detailed in this item, the county commits more than $6 million in recurring funding for programs and services dedicated to addressing poverty and inequity in the community, including neighborhoods in 32304. Through human services, healthcare, housing, library services, and economic development. In addition, the county has provided over $62 million in one-time funding to provide food, rent, utility, health, microloans, business, and nonprofit assistance for those most in need during the pandemic. So to build on the county's investment, this item recommends additional annual investments in mental health outreach events in collaboration with the City of Tallahassee and Mental Health Council within the high poverty neighborhoods. Future funding will be included as part of the budget process. One of the things that we talked about, the money, you look at the national level and we see the money that's being allocated with the infrastructure bill that was passed and now the Build Back Better plan. But, you know, we have sort of the same thing going on here locally. The money that is being spent on these issues, this is not to mention the Children's Services Council, which is going to pump another $8 million a year into addressing issues that are similar to this. The question is, what do we have to measure the impact here? What are we looking for? You know, I would promise you that we have been stuck on the poverty number that everybody uses as support for need of these programs at 20% for the last 10 to 15 years. I'll have to go back and verify that. But I would bet you that it hasn't moved, you know, very little off that 20% number. So I know there are questions about the validity of that number. But again, you know, are we going to have a plan in place to say, look, you know, what is this $6 million in recurring funding getting us? What is the $62 million in one-time funding? Should have lowered the number for at least that year, you would think. I think a lot of questions about exactly how to measure this, but don't be mistaken. There's a lot of money that is moving through the system. And so, the question would be, you know, what's the impact on this? And the last thing I wanted to touch on during this segment is I wanted to look at this issue with the consent order policy for the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Now, this sounds like a mouthful, and it was, but it has to deal with something that local government deals with, and that's the sewer system. And this item, it says, adopt the FDEP consent order policy that ensures a transparent process and allows the city manager to exercise existing authority to expedite and resolve environmental violations in order to maintain continuity of essential services for the community. And, you know, basically, let me read this consent order part. FDEP has the power and duty to protect Florida's air and water resources and to administer and enforce the provisions of the state law. Many aspects of these services provided to our community via city operations are subject to FDEP regulation. In other words, what the city's doing, they have to answer to the FDEP, and potential consequences for failing to timely, deal with these regulations can result in consent decrees. They can result in failing to issue a permit to renew the ability to continue specific services. And so this is something that's been in the news. We've covered some of the spills that have happened here locally. And there's a group that keeps track. They have a website that keeps track of these spills. But they get the information not from the city. They get it from the state. And again, There's not a real good process in place. Look, this is not something you want to brag about. You know, there was coverage of a 450,000-gallon spill just recently. And so it's something that we need to get a handle on, because FDEB has the authority to assess fines up to $15,000 per day. And so anyway, something that the city commission will take up on Wednesday, and we'll follow the discussion and see how it applies to what's going on right now, and keep you informed. All right, when we get back, we'll talk about some statewide issues. But first, we'll talk about some major developments going around the city that you may not know about. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. Bob Seger, saw him in concert in 1981, Maddie.
Did you see him?
Yeah.
Oh, that must have been awesome.
It was. Anyway, that's back in the old college days. That's back when they had those. Well, they still have it, I guess. Yeah, they used to have those tours. Heart. I think I saw Heart also. Remember Heart?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But anyway. Well, all right. Couple of developments I wanted to talk about. Residential developments. There's this item at school board meetings that they have to file potential developments have to get the approval of the school board from a school impact analysis. And so, look, it looks like this is just sort of a standard thing that doesn't really get analyzed to. It gets analyzed, but doesn't really mean anything. I mean, when you've all the findings are no negative impact on Leon schools. But when you go through this, you can see every little development. I mean, there's a development here for 4 single family units that has to file this form with the school board. But when you review this, like we do as reporters, you see some interesting things. Now, a couple of these developments, look, have been reported on. We've reported on 2 of these 3. One is the Bradfordville Hills neighborhood or development, which is up behind Childs High School off of Thomasville Road. There's like, I think it's 180 acres there. They're going to build 1,876 residential units. Huge, huge development. Now, there's the other one that's included in this school board agenda is the Canopy, more development in the Canopy neighborhood. And that's another 1,600 units. Now, I don't know the exact timing of these, but obviously they're in the process because they're getting this approved. And obviously they can roll it out in different increments, but that's 3,500 units that, you know, have been approved, and there's no negative impact on Leon County schools. So, all right, but here's one I bet you don't know about. And, you can say you heard it first here on, Above the Fold, but it is a development called the English Property, Planned Unit Development. And it is a, it has the opportunity or the ability to the permitting for 9,800 residential units. And so the location of that is, it's at the corner of Paul Russell Road and Blairstone. It would be the south, I guess you would call it the southwest corner, right down from the VA hospital on a north-south geography, and then east of Rickards High School. And so that is a huge area. And, you know, it's so again, the timing on this is unsure, but it is, they're saying here the number of dwelling units per acre, 20. And so basically 20, and they translate that to 9,800 units. Now, this is going to be obviously all these developments will have room for mixed use. And, you know, they're looking at this, just to give you an example of their analysis. So they're looking at this, I guess, if this was completely built out, would result in 2,000 new students in that school district, in elementary school, 800 in middle school, and about 800 in high school. So anyway, a huge development that I'm sure you'll be hearing more and more about as you know, the approvals. And this is on the city commission agenda also today or tomorrow. And so it'll be interesting to see the comments on that. But you know, again, you know, those three developments, it seems like would facilitate a lot of growth over the next 10 years. Now I wanted to turn to a couple of state issues here in our remaining, moments. You know, the formality of Governor Ron DeSantis declaring his candidacy for governor has taken place. And, you know, it's this is going to be an interesting year, race to the 2022 elections. You've got all, you know, the midterms from a federal standpoint, and you've got the governor's race here in Florida with all the state-level cabinet officers. DeSantis, you know, it's been in news recently from the campaign side because of the National Democratic Governors Association indicating they may not be all in with, you know, writing a big check here to help out the Democrats because of the poll numbers and sort of, you know, the political climate. And then enter Roger Stone, who is arguing that he will run if DeSantis doesn't say he won't run for president if he's elected governor. So that adds a little bit of a quirky, you know, detail to it. The other thing, you know, and everybody talks about, you know, look, the leads that, you know, the Republicans might have in this gubernatorial race. And, you know, I know that DeSantis has served for 4 years, and so he does have a record. He didn't before. He had Trump's endorsement. But, you know, he ran against a first-time gubernatorial candidate, and Andrew Gillum, and he only won by 33,000 votes. And so, you know, to say that, you know, this is a foregone conclusion, given, you know, how divided Florida is, you know, I think would be probably a little bit naive. However, the other part of that is if you start looking at some of the other reports in the media, Republican registration is finally surpassed by the end of this year. Democratic registration for the first time in history. And so to give you the idea of the impact of that, is that when Obama ran in 2008, Democrats had a 700,000 voter registration lead over Republicans. And so now that is basically zero. So that obviously has to have some impact. Now, the fastest growing part of the registration is independents. Still, that is a huge, so you got to win independence, and that's a huge part of this. But look, there are definitely some things that favor DeSantis in 2022. And so, but him declaring and then having the 50 million is obviously very helpful. The other thing we briefly touched on was the backtracking of the University of Florida in regards to these professors who were going to testify against the state's case, the Florida's case on the election bill. They were told they couldn't do it if they were being paid. And then they were told they could do it if they would do it pro bono, which means for free. And now they've been told, scrap all that. You can do it even if you're getting paid. So that is a little bit of a political black eye for the University of Florida. Obviously, the media is tying this to donors that are on the board, tying it to Ron DeSantis donors that are on the board. And so, anyway, always a political bent on these things. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about real quick is this Jacksonville murder case involving an immigrant creates further criticism of Biden's border policy. Now, look, you know, I think this is an issue that DeSantis has taken up now because the murder of a Jacksonville man, you know, has stirred this criticism up because it turns out that according to a report by a news outlet in Jacksonville, that the 24-year-old suspect, the alleged murderer, is from Honduras, and he posed as a teenager at the border so that he could pass as an unaccompanied minor. However, federal officials have yet to comment on how he got to Florida. look, there's all kind of now conspiracies that the, you know, we verified that they were flying some of these immigrants and distributing them across different areas. One of those areas was Jacksonville. And so anyway, we'll keep an eye on this case, which is both emotional and you got to be careful because it can be very political, but also can be an out, you know, can be a, one of these outcomes of a flawed policy. So we'll keep an eye on that. All right. Thanks for joining me today. Have a great rest of the Tuesday, and we will see you here back here on Thursday. Have a great afternoon.